Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. Wow. It's over the bar.
Hi there, welcome to the RTE GA podcast. I'm without Rory O'Neill this week, so I brought in two charismatic men who can do the job of three men. We have Desi Dolan and we have Malachy Gorkin of the Irish Times. Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to have you.
How are you doing?
I'm very well. Yeah, good. Right, so you could argue that this is actually the most important weekend of football of the season. And for that very reason, we're going to pretty much ignore the best four teams in the country, because the Division 1 semi-finals, barring two certain results, will not result in a final. Whereas the relegation from Division 1 obviously is of consequence, and then promotion and relegation in the middle two divisions and promotion in Division 4. It's all to play for, isn't it great? But just before we get on to the matches that matter, we might as well mention, you know, those Division 1 semi-finals. Desi, I think it was Kieran Shannon I read make the suggestion, knowing what we know now and knowing what the GA knew about the calendar at the start, could we not have just had a Division 1 final? You could have had the top team from Division 1 North and top team Division 1 South play a final, and that would have solved a bit of a headache.
Yeah, well, I suppose the planning of the leagues probably look a little bit rushed right now. And the way the permutations of having a semi-final isn't feasible at all. Probably wasn't feasible in terms of the planning. They didn't do a good job on that. It's come to light now that I suppose the finish of the termination of the league is totally up in the air. It's not the way. And even, you know, like people are calling on Monaghan, Cork in terms of their home venues. Like, is there anything we can do? They have the home venues now. Can we change the rules to say that they shouldn't have home venues? And like, hindsight in the GA would be fantastic if you had that magic crystal ball. But no, it's not going to work out. It is what it is. It is the league. To be honest, Division 1 doesn't really matter anyways, because them teams, once they're in Division 1, will be happy. Where all the action is, and always for me is 2, 3, and 4. Who's getting promoted? Who's staying in the division? Who's getting relegated? That's where it's at in terms of the league. Because if you want to be a team that wants to go places, you need to get up. For example, Colin Collins and Clare need to get up to Division, possibly Division 1. But that's progress in the county. And that's how you measure success. Your league measures success. And that's the value of the league. And that's why you can't underpin it. And that's where progress is measured. And that's why the likes of Galway, Pádraig Joyce, you know, a lot of pressure on him this weekend. Hasn't won his championship match last year, playing unbelievable before the pandemic. Now there's question marks. So the league is important. No one wants to get relegated.
So if you're here for chat about Donegal v Dublin and Kerry v Tyrone, jog on. That's it. We're done with it now. We're on to the real stuff now. So we will talk a little bit about Division 1 here, Malachy, in your own county, Monaghan against Galway in a relegation playoff. Monaghan have been around Division 1 for a good while now, won't want to go down. And very back of a fag box analysis here for me would be that the matches in Division 1 North have been incredibly tight. Lots of draws, lots of 1-point, 2-point victories. Like the points difference between the four teams is practically nil. Like, it's really interesting, kind of the points difference. Whereas Galway were on the back of a hiding against Kerry and kind of regained a little bit of respectability from there. But the logic would be that Banty's men would be that little bit more battle hardened and well trained.
Yeah, Banty's men are one of the very few teams in the country that haven't won a game since before the pandemic. They lost and drew in the league last year, lost the first game of the championship, and didn't win any games in Division 1 North. So I wouldn't, nobody at Monaghan is jumping around going, nice handy one against Galway lads and we'll stay in the division. They have the third longest streak in Division 1 behind Dublin and Kerry. They've been there for, I think, six, seven seasons at this stage. Everybody else has gone out and come back and what have you. It's very hard to know what they're about at the minute. They seem to have found a band of four or five younger guys, which was badly needed. You know, they have been more or less the same team throughout their Division 1 time. Like, oddly, in a kind of a weird kind of way, This is a specious argument, but I'll make it anyway. That to a certain extent, the long streak in Division 1, I don't know how much it has helped them. I know that you have to be in Division One. I know that's what everybody says. I think the odd season in Division Two mightn't have killed them to get a few newer players through earlier. There was a definitely a couple of seasons there, say 2018, 2019, where they, you would find them putting a huge amount into the league to stay in Division One. And so therefore you had Conor McManus playing more or less every minute of every game some years in the league in February, even though, you know, his hip isn't great and hasn't been great since he was about 25. You would find Darren Hughes playing every minute of every game. You'd find Kieran Hughes and Colin Walsh and like the real stalwarts of the team, Drew Wiley, all these guys, and they would play an awful lot of minutes in the league. And that's fine, you know, look, it coincided with their best period. They get to an All-Ireland semi-final in whatever it was, 2018. But I think, I don't know if really going eyeballs out every year to stay in Division One, I don't know if it was that, if it has been that great a thing for them. Look, now finally they have some new players through. Aaron Mulligan looks very good at wing forward. Andrew Woods played a bit last year. Big guy in around the full forward, definitely needed. They have a lot of pace, which Monaghan teams haven't had in a good while. But they didn't win any of these games. They should have beaten... Hang on, they drew a game that they should have lost against Tyrone, and they drew a game that they should have won against Donegal. Like they scored four goals against Donegal. They were more or less out the gap and didn't kill them off, which is a very, very Monaghan thing.
So, Desi, Maliki is advocating that Monaghan throw this game against Galway.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, I just now that they're there and they haven't against Galway, like, they need a win. Like, yeah. they haven't won a game in 16 months. They need to win a bloody game.
Yeah, but like I'd say, an angry Pádraig Joyce. Like, Pádraig Joyce is going up to Monaghan and he's annoyed. I felt after the Kerry match originally, when they lost by 22 points or so, I was down in Saltail. I was watching him against Roscommon. It was a test. He brought in Sean Kelly into the corner. He brought in Kieran Malloy to mark Enda Smith. Mm. He locked down the goal. He locked down the defence. Paul Conroy, Damien Comer, he's looking for leaders. Like, you're telling me a team with Shane Walsh and it's heading up the Clonus or whatever. Like, the reality is that Galway have match winners. Mm. And Pádraig Joyce, he doesn't need to hold pile to motivate his team to stay in the Division One. And with Pádraig Joyce, like, he was animated against Roscommon because he knew there was a bit of pressure in that match. He was shouting at his players because he can hear everything now and there's no crowds around. But, like, he was well up for it. I would imagine that's going to be a spicy match. He knows Monaghan well. He'd know Banty, the setup. It's going to be... I think that's going to be a great match, that match this weekend.
Yeah.
They're a really interesting Galway, aren't they? Like, because, you know, without the pandemic, where would Galway be at the minute? They were on such a roll.
Yeah. That was so good to watch as well.
And so good to watch. The last match I did before the Irish fell out of the world was them playing Meath in Navan. And, like, Meath played really well for the first 25 minutes. And then Galway just absolutely blew them out of the water in the sort of 10, 15 minutes either side of halftime. And they were on such a roll. And, like, time is passing, man. You know, like, if they don't win on Sunday, they get relegated. So they're down to Division One.
Yeah.
They have to win a bloody Connacht Championship. Or else next thing you know, like... Time has passed like that, and the first 2 years of Pádraig Joyce's reign are gone. He's into year three, and where are they compared to
the Leicester City of Gaelic football world? Yes, where would they be without a pandemic? The Champions League. Leicester fan, I'm letting it drip in because we're not going to talk Wexford football here, so I'm probably just going to mention Leicester City on occasion. The under relegation semi final there pits impressive. New boys are mad, Desi, against the West Brom of Gaelic football, if we're going to continue the Premier League analogies, in Roscommon, who, unlike Monaghan, never killed themselves to stay in Division 1. Quite happy going to go down to Division 2. A year or two there won't kill them. They'll know they'll come back up. There's a certain rhythm to being a Roscommon football fan, I think, isn't there?
Yeah, it's gone a little bit stale. They brought in Stephen Poacher. To be honest, I thought there'd be a couple of more buses bought in that defence, but it didn't actually materialise. I seen a picture of the first round of the league, and it was the three Kierans having a chat, Kieran McKeever, Kieran McGeaney, and Kieran Donaghy. And I was like, the three musketeers. I was like, I would love to be a player in Armagh right now. Kieran McGeaney was the captain and compromise rules I played with. The most inspirational man I've ever come across, and doesn't get the credit he deserves. A great guy, great manager, and quite funny and witty as well when he wants to be. Kieran Donaghy is the largest personality you come across. He fills a room with energy when he comes into it. And Kieran McKeever, I have a scar about 12 inches on my thigh from Kieran McKeever. And do you know what? I have respect for him. It's like a badge of approval for me. I'm delighted to have it because it's a Kieran McKeever stamp of approval.
And how did that happen?
It was just his cogs caught me, but you know, it was totally the accident in his world. But at the same time, like,
stamp on the badge,
he was teak tough. He's the lad I'd love to go to war with. And when you put that management team together and Armagh with the potential that they have, the forwards that they have, it's a great test for them Sunday, because Roscommon have good forwards. They're hot and cold. When they're good, they're very good. I suppose the only thing for me is that people have kind of caught on to Enda Smith insofar as let's lock it down Enda Smith. Pádraig Joyce did it with Kieran Molloy. And when Enda Smith is quiet, Roscommon don't play with that fluency. And when they brought him out to midfield, he improved last weekend because it was a bit freer. But Enda Smith wants it loose and free. Other teams, for example, Armagh this weekend, are not going to give Enda Smith that freedom.
No, certainly not. Have you been impressed by Armagh, Maliki? There's they've just got such a coterie of young footballers come through in every line. They're like, from goalkeeper to full forward line, there is impressive players there. And as Desia says, they've got a backroom team there now, which any young player would love to be working under.
Yeah, I was impressed. I've been impressed with them for about 3 years without them really quite getting there. But like, When Ulster football was in the real depths in sort of 2017-ish, when every team, and my team most of all, were just, you know, absolutely 13 men behind the ball, fast break, that making that what the sport had become. And every team in Ulster was doing it, like, and you know, really deciding that it was the only way to do it. Armagh were kind of out of the gap quicker than everybody else, trying to, McGeaney really got them to try and kick the ball, that's like a very small thing, but it's amazing the small mercies you get thankful for. But they really were trying to play constructive football before the rest of the Ulster teams. And now, look, in this league, whether this league has been a one-off or not, we'll find out as time passes. But like, all those games up there were so much freer, so much more open, and like, it suits Armagh.
But still incredibly competitive, Maliki, is the interesting thing. They were still incredibly tight games. Yeah. It wasn't like what we've seen in hurling a bit this year, is that we've had blowouts one way and the other, and, you know, kind of a lack of the word intensity, but like, it didn't seem like quite like everything was on the line, whereas Division 1 North, it has seemed like, even though teams are going, have loosened up a bit, the matches are still so competitive.
Yeah, and the thing is, it isn't that they have specifically loosened up. It's just, you know, some of the tactics have been so different. You saw Michael Langan's goal for Donegal against Armagh. Like, that came because Armagh pushed 11 into the Donegal half for the kickout, and Sean Patton got it away quickly. And by the time... So some of the Armagh players retreated, but still, when Langan got the ball on his own 65 and managed to run from there to score a goal at the other end. But when he got the ball, I actually froze the frame, and there were 8 Armagh players inside the Donegal 65 when Langan gets the ball. Now, partly, like, his goal was a fantastic goal. He runs the length of the pitch with 3 lads running after them, and they try and tackle him, and the Donegal forwards ahead of him run out of the way and make space for him. But like, he basically only had 6 defenders in front of him when he gets the ball on his own 65.
Imagine, 6. Only 6.
Aaron Ulster is the Pep Guardiola of the GA world.
Like, this is it. Like, this is in two Ulster teams playing a game of football. Like, you know, we haven't seen this.
Sit down, quick.
we'll segue we'll segue because we have time. Time is against us because there's so many games that actually matter. To the one team in Ulster who, I'm going to Division 2 now, relegation, the one team in Ulster who didn't get the memo, Desi, are down, who seem to be being panned from all corners for being impossible to watch and also not winning any games. Luckily, this weekend they're playing Laois team, who a Westmeath man will take no pleasure in saying haven't exactly had the greatest of league campaigns either. This seems to be the defence-ridden team against a team who can't win.
Do you know what? The team to play in the relegation battle for me was Laois. Westmeath should have beaten Down at home after playing so well against Mayo in Mullingar. A lot of Mayo people are saying to me how good a performance was. And for me, the test was when they played Down. And Down came out, it was 9 points to three after 25 minutes, 30 minutes in that match. Very disappointing display. Down will be absolutely delighted. They have a home match. They're after getting a win. It's a great opportunity for playing a team. And Laois have a lot of injuries. They have Colin Begley pulled up. I was watching the match against Cork, pull up with a hamstring. The two Kingstons went off, didn't play the last day. These are all players that are critical to Laois and their success. And without them, they looked very average. And even against Cork for large periods, up front, they weren't functional at all. They weren't scoring. They didn't have the scoring threat when Donny Kingston was being held up. So for me, it's a great opportunity for Down to stay in the division, get the win against a Laois team that are really struggling for confidence. They're struggling for players. And in general, they're not playing good football. And for me, I'm really disappointed because it should be Westmeath that's playing them and staying in the division, but it's not.
Have you been surprised by Laois this year, Malachy? And granted, I'm guessing you haven't seen a huge amount of them.
I've seen a massive amount, Again, I'm almost going back pre-pandemic. Like when Mike Quirk came in at the start and the start of the 2020 league, like they had some great results and some great performances. I think, like, didn't they beat Armagh in an early
start off well early? They started really well. Yeah.
So it has fizzled out, and they played Dublin in the championship last year. You know, got the same hyping that everybody else gets from Dublin. But like Quirk is such a, like he's such a sensible speaker. He is such an empathetic coach. I really thought that he would get more out of them. I didn't know that they had lost so many players to injury, but I think, you know, you are looking through the team and it's a lot of familiar names there, you know, like Gary Walsh is still the top scorer.
I suppose the problem when you're going to war with players, and the confidence is a little bit low. Some days Gary Walsh can be electric, other days not. Donny Kingston the same. Yeah. Evan O'Carroll's a lovely player when it's going well. When it's not going well, like you're looking at the forwards going, somebody do something. And there's, you know, like there's an energy missing in Laois right now. They have a couple of weeks to the championship. They're actually playing Westmeath in the championship. It will be interesting. Mike Quirk has a lot of work to do to get them players positive. And look, sure, a win this weekend, who's to say they wouldn't, like, but for me now looking at it, I have to say Down are in a strong position to win that game.
Yeah, you don't sound very confident about Westmeath's chances against Cork, does he?
No, and the reason is we've lost Kieran Martin, who's a big player, and that disappoints me. He's after rupturing his Achilles. I just feel the GAA players were let down by the GAA and the GPA in terms of player welfare, giving the players enough time to get back. I do feel 4 weeks wasn't enough. There's an awful lot of injuries. You have to say that, Malachy, going to matches. There's
unbelievable. And look, the whole point about this, we won't go down a rabbit hole, but like they needed to be more demanding of
what's the role of the GPA to protect their players? And the amount of injuries, like Kieran Martin physically wasn't as fit as he normally is. He's after rupturing his Achilles. There's a change in weather, change in pitches. All of these variables weren't considered. There's players pulling up and down the country that normally have got miles in the clock. And obviously players get injured, but the volume, and nobody's saying, nobody in the country is going, oh, well, the players didn't get, the players are amateur. They're amateur. They need to be, because they're amateur, they need to be looked after more than professional players, because professional players ultimately are a piece of meat.
Look, we all had a lot of fun with Dublin and Monaghan and Down and their meeting up clandestinely. But there's almost a duty of care.
That's what I'm saying, Malachy.
The players have been let down. They spent the last 6 months running in straight lines, and you know, you saw John Small pull up with a hamstring injury. Yeah,
Michael Murphy Conn Begley
In hurling, Bonner Maher has done his Achilles the same. You know, it is tough on them.
Like a ruptured Achilles. Like Kieran Martin is a serious player. He's 30 years of age. He's after rupturing Achilles. Where does he go from there? He's a big man, fitness. It's a long time out at his age that he's at. Look, we can move on to the game. The fact that it's going down to Páirc Uí Chaoimh. The fact I've seen Cork are like Armagh. When they're good, they're really good. And when they're bad, they can be brutal. And because they're Cork, you'd give Westmeath a bit of a chance. If they play like they played against Mayo. But for me, the fact that they lost to Down when they should have won that game is a concern. I don't think Westmeath's panel is very small. The one thing I've learned as well, that literally if you don't have a panel of subs, I think Dublin copped onto this maybe 7, 8, 9 years ago, that if you don't have the 5 absolute flyers to come in, like, it's the best tactic in the world. Like, your subs win your games. Yeah. There's the tactic. Get on it. Except Westmeath introduced the sub, there really isn't an impact. And if you want to be a decent team, a team that's individual, when you're like, for example, Mead, Andy McEntee has Brian McMahon back, he's Eamon Wallace, and these lads are coming towards the end of their career, still lethal and dangerous, but the fact that they're happy to be on the bench and making an impact is a vital tool that Andy McEntee has got, and the players are actually happy to come in for the 20 minutes because it suits
that
their age profile.
Awfully of something similar going on with McNamee and a few other lads that they
exactly. Kind of, there's a point. The like it's critical, really, for teams to develop to have the extra few players. And in fairness to Bantry, that's why he's trying to get his few players in.
Yeah, but as you say, Daddy, like the further you go down the divisions, the less the less incentive there is for players to hang around like that. You know, they go past 30, they start having families, they start having work, they start have all those things to do. Am I really going to do it for 20 minutes at the end of a game? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
yeah. So they're the relegation playoffs in Division 2. Two very interesting games, I believe. There's been a lot of talk, Malachy, about Clare and Colm Collins, but I think everybody at university likes journalists of Colm Collins because he answers the phone and he answers questions, honestly, which is part of the reason they got so much media. But the other hand is they've done...
Very important, Mikey.
Is very important. Let's not bullshit people here. But after all the talk and all the press, the chances of them making it to Division 1 are incredibly slim. They're coming up against a Mayo team who look just too good for Division 2, as we all expected they would. And I would say, Malachy, from looking at Mayo this year, I would say their attack has developed considerably in the last couple of years, but understandably, given who has retired in the last 12 months, their defence is the work in progress for James Horne.
Yeah, I mean, I've been looking at Mayo a little bit. Maybe it was informing what I was talking about Monaghan at the start. Like, a year in Division 2 has done Mayo no harm. Know, especially a lot of those young players. Like, we know James Carr from his goal a couple of years ago, but like, he's shown in this league he's so much more than that. You know, like, he's just a really... Now, as I say, it's at a lower level and we'll see what it is come, say, an All-Ireland semi-final. That's a different story. But like, at this lower level, he has been able to run defences ragged. You can see a player that thinks that half step quicker than the defender he's up against compared to when he's, let's say, playing, you know, against John Small or something like that. You know, he just, that half step quicker. Yeah, yeah, at the back, you just don't know, Mikey, what way that's going to work out until they find a higher level. They haven't been really, really tested. Like, they are, in every year, even in the old formats of the leagues, you always saw a team that was... had no business being in a division. Mayo have no real business being in Division 2. They're so much better than middling, which is what Division 2 is. It's for middling teams. Mayo are part of the elite. Yeah. And so they have... And now, all you have to do when you're in that situation is show that you're part of the elite. You know, you're like... as Desi says about Cork, they went down to bleed in Division 3, which is a complete dereliction of duty. You know, they had no business being there, you know?
Yeah.
And but they are like, you're right. Clare got the bad draw here, and they've got the bad draw in Munster, and it's not really fair.
Yeah, I do have to say, I was down in Castlebar last weekend. I was absolutely blown away by Mayo. And I think people dismiss them to a certain degree now because they go, ah, they're just not going to do it, are they? Like, and the reality is, honestly, Maliki, I have to say, no, I'm going to say this, like, Mayo, James Horn, he had the game finished up. He took off Killian and Lee at halftime, brought on Aidan O'Shea. The game finished up. There was the 15 subs, whatever it was. Then there's another 10 players. The stage, like, it was just Division 2. They won the game by a cricket score. And then what they did was, for 40 minutes, 30 minutes to 40 minutes after that game, they were sprinting up and down the pitch, the whole lot of them, up and down, up and down. The gear was magnificent. I was talking to Chairman Lee Moffat. The whole environment was all so professional. Kieran McDonald down there, James Horn. It's a serious operation with a serious
player. Do you know what? I'm laughing. Maliki,
don't dismiss them.
I'm not dismissing them in the slightest. Not in the slightest. I'm only laughing because I was at I was in Mullingar on Sunday, and Tipperary did exactly the same after murdering Westmeath in their league match. They beat them out the gate, beat them by however many points they beat them, and then spent exactly 40 minutes running the gizzard out of them, up and down the pitch. Noel McGrath, Paddy Cadell, all these guys
got unbelievable.
Absolute shit run out of them. The blazing sun.
I couldn't get over it. I actually couldn't get over Mikey when I was there watching.
That's fascinating.
As well as that, Lee Keegan went off at half time. Aidan O'Shea came on after 5 minutes second half. All of these guys, there was nobody saying, no, I'm not doing the running. There was a mountain of players. You talk about James Carr was excellent, Brian Walsh, Darren McHale, you have Paul Towey, Jack Carney, Ryan O'Donoghue, Tommy Conroy's a young lad, but all of these players are squad players that people, that I felt maybe, as Maliki said, wasn't so sure about them, but the confidence that they're getting playing in the division.
And Desi, they all have an All-Ireland final played.
Yeah.
And I know there's nobody there.
And do you know what he did as well?
An All-Ireland final played that, fair enough, Dublin won well in the end, but going into the water break, there was 2 points in it in the second
half. And do you know what, Maliki? I have to say, Oisin Mullen, I don't know, is the long hair. I don't know. He got his All-Star last year. He was incredible in the final as well. That man can play anywhere. I seen him taking two men straight out of it. The ball was hanging in the air. Two Meath lads going for it. Oisin Mullen came through the back of the two of them. Two lads were lying on the ground, panned out. He moved into full back. He commanded that area. He was excellent. He could play any position on the pitch, I would say. He's an outstanding footballer. And really, watching him live, I was blown away by his physique, his power, his speed, everything. An excellent player. And, you know, when you talk about that, the full back line defensively, that's a man that can you know, close down a Dean Rock. I'm telling you, close down a Conor Callaghan.
That's what they need.
He might get his chance. The other semi-final, I think, is very interesting. They're in Division 2, Kildare v Meath. Obviously, they played in the Leinster semi-final last year, Maliki, and Meath scored 5 goals, and that kind of won them the game.
That was it, really.
This, so far in the league, Meath have only scored 4 goals, and Kildare have only conceded 2. So the chances of that happening again might be slim enough, but you never know. Kildare do look like they've improved somewhat, I would say, Maliki. They seem to have found, they've got more scores. I think they had 10 different scorers against Laois. Granted, it was a Laois team we've kind of dismissed, but they do seem to be developing, and God knows, give Jack O'Connor long enough with any group of players and he's probably going to develop them, so we shouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, and like they found another forward there in the young lad that was brilliant against Cork. Was it Kerwin, Darragh Kerwin? Scored a couple of brilliant points against Cork. And Jimmy Highland is there. Like, but they can still throw in the odd stinker. Like, you know, they were poor against Clare, you know? And, I think they will beat me. There's really never anything between these two. Like you say, that game last year when Meath scored 5 goals, like I think Kildare got 3. Like it was a ridiculous game.
That's another possibility of a cracking match.
Yeah.
Because Andy McEntee against Mayo was true. He made 8 changes. It was kind of crazy stuff. There was just lads coming in all over the place and that. You know, the way, like, as a reporter, Maliki, you don't appreciate that kind of level of skullduggery.
Don't start me on the 7 subs.
Yeah, crazy stuff. But I do have to say that with the eye of the Kildare game, I do think he's found something with the bench in terms of the players and the quality that they have. Like Brian McMahon is a serious talent. You have Eamon Wallace, you have Joey Wallace, the pace. And it's pace at that critical time, the 50, 55 minute mark, when you're introduced that level of pace. For me, and with Andy McIntyre, I suppose Jack O'Connor and Andy McIntyre, it's feisty on the line too. It's a big price. Division One football is massive. Like, it really is for these counties.
It's a great game. Sorry, Maliki, that game was 5-9 to 15 points.
5-9 to 15. All right, yeah. What am I thinking?
That's all right. Totally we're nearly out of time, and my Zoom meeting is telling me Henry Shefflin is waiting in the waiting room.
Not a bad fella to have waiting.
I'll give him 5 minutes, but I can't keep him waiting anymore for 5 minutes.
Mikey, what's more?
Come on, ask him what he thinks about Division Three football.
So, Derry v Limerick, I'm going to file under.
Derry are very fit. As Ryan McMenamin said, very fit. No, they're very, very fit. What is going on with Derry? How are they so fit? They kept Longford to 5 points.
Yeah, they look like a fantastic team. Granted, very fit, but lots of good.
Some quality. Conor Glass, Shane Guigan, magic footballer. They're going like well. Do you know what? Untapped potential in Derry. They're always like that. You've seen that. I've come across them over the years. Derry can be amazing when they get dragged together.
Yeah, no, I think so. And like Cork before them, as you mentioned, and Mayo, they were playing in divisions lower than they should have been playing. They were Absolutely. In Division 4. I think they're coming somewhere back up towards their own level now. But Derry have been grabbing the highlights, Maliki. Meanwhile, Offaly, 3 wins from 3. The John Mahon revolution continues. The
revolution continues, yeah. You've got to hand it to Mahon. Like, it has been a constant, gradual rise from when he went in there. And like, Mahon is now, he's rarely less than honest. Like, you could see Mahon talking after 6 months going, I'm not entirely sure what I would got myself into here, you know, because it was really, really down. And it was really, like, they have done some serious work to just rise and rise and rise a little bit every year. Like, they know their limitations. They know they're not going to compete really in the Leinster Championship. But like, promotion out of that division is some goal. Like, if they're playing in Division Two,
don't you have to say, Maliki, that with Michael Deignan there as chairman, with Shane Lowry coming in with sponsorship, they're trying to increase the GDOs, the Games Development Officers. They had maybe three or four trying to increase. They have a number in their mind to get to 20, I think, for the primary schools. Like, there's a clear vision. They've fundraised and got their centre of excellence. It's a crest of a wave, and John Mahon is a very charismatic guy. He's been around football, Clare 92, Mayo. He's been Fermanagh. He's been around a lot of teams, a lot of experience. He cannot put value on a manager with a bit of charisma like him and a bit of know-how. He knows the game. People have to appreciate the man knows the game. He has charisma. He knows what it takes to win. And then he's a couple of great players. And we mentioned Niall McNamee. What, for me, an outstanding talent, and it's great to see him back on the pitch, and it's great to see him back on the pitch kicking serious scores, and he's just such a talent.
I thought you were going to say you cannot list all the teams John Mahon managed, because I couldn't even
try. I think he did all right. Is there
he did all right. You definitely missed a couple, but you did all right.
Clare, Mayo, Offaly. Is there anyone else? I knew he wanted a county job because he was in for the interview for the Westmeath job. Right?
In a couple of words here, lads, before I let Henry in, Cavan v Wicklow, Tip v Longford. We could have two provincial champions playing in Division 4 next year. That's a bit mad, Maliki, isn't it?
It is a wee bit mad, I guess.
Cavan don't do good leagues, though, we've discovered.
And haven't, but I'd be a wee bit worried about them having been so bad. It's almost as if they didn't really get the memo, and especially like this is a really short season. You know, if you're really bad for 2-3 games, like, that's half your year.
You know? But lads, you win your provincial title for the first time in donkey's years. Them boys are not tuned in. They're not, like, you're the manager and you're saying everything. You're dancing on the table trying to get these boys motivated. They've won their provincial title. They're gone to sleep for 2 or 3 years at least.
Yeah, but Desi, the pubs have been closed. How really? That's
Maliki.
How much celebrating can they
be? Basking in the glory of the provincial title because they never thought it would happen for a while.
Okay, we really have to leave it there. Division fans of Division 4 football like myself, I make a promise now, which somebody better remind me of next week, that we will start the football section in next week's podcast with the Division 4 promotion semi-finals, and that's a promise, because they matter too, and we just haven't time for them now. Desi, thank you very much for your time, and we will catch you again soon.
He hits it. It's over the bar.
Okay, we're back, and we've been joined by Henry Shefflin. How are you getting on, Henry?
All good, Mikey. Yeah, all good.
All right. Henry, I think there was a meeting in Kilkenny last week. I'm not sure whether you were invited. Your former teammates, Richie Power, Owen Larkin, Jackie Tyrrell, and Eddie Brennan, have all come out rather stridently about the state of hurling at the moment. Were you at the meeting? And if not, is it because you don't agree with your former teammates?
No, I wasn't at the meeting. Maybe because I'm a free taker, they left me out, Mickey. So I could have missed out. And I'm happy. I was interested to see, obviously, Jackie being there, or some of the defenders, but obviously some of the forwards as well are not too happy with all this free scoring game that's going on. I thought they would have been delighted, but no, I missed out on that meeting.
How do you see the state of the game? As I have a couple of questions to ask you about this, but this is the obvious one. Like, do you think hurling has changed irrevocably in the last couple of years, or are we having, as I mentioned at the start, a league that doesn't matter massively, and I don't know if teams are going full-blooded into games, and is that having an impact, or have all these rule changes fundamentally changed the game of hurling?
I don't think the rule changes have changed the game of hurling, definitely. You know, we always give out about the rules because it's an easy one for the pick at the beginning of the year, but I think it's settled down very well. So I think the rules are not having an effect. I definitely think, and it's been well spoken about now the last couple of weeks, I think the equipment of the game of hurling has definitely changed, and the ball itself, I think that's having a massive impact. So I was at a Camogie Under 14 match last night, and there were some of the players striking the Camogie ball 50, 60 yards, like some of the amazing scores. And that's the level it's got to now because of the equipment, because of the consistency of the equipment. And I think the way the players tactically as well, the way they're being coached and how to play the game, all these things are feeding in. So I don't think the game has changed to a level that we should be too concerned. I think it'll all balance itself out. But there's no doubt, when you look at the scores, I just looked at the scores across the three divisions last Sunday. Like, my God, like, there was one game that stood out probably back to when I was playing. Division 3B, Cavan 120, Leitrim 117 in a hurling game. And that was the only game. The rest of them, like, were 525s across all the various different divisions. So I think the level of scoring has definitely impacted on the game at the moment. Will that settle a bit for the championship? It probably will, but the direction is going, there is probably concerns there. And it was interesting to see just this morning, I don't know if you picked up on it, you know, President Larry McCarthy is tasked Ned Quinn now as chairing up an advisory committee to look into the slitter and the dimensions of the slitter and the rim of the slitter. So that'll be an interesting development.
Yeah. Malachy, you watch a lot of hurling, and as a Monaghan man, I know you have a deep draw for the great appreciation of it. You make fun of yourself sometimes, but I think you're just fishing for compliments. I'm a massive hurling fan. It's my first love. It absolutely is. And I think you can be in danger here. You get kind of there's it's very polarized debate, and it seems like you can't love hurling and criticize it in some people's eyes, whereas obviously the people who love hurling are the ones who are most likely to criticize it. I, for one, think, and have said it for a couple of years, that the number of scores in the game, it's not off-putting, but it's noticeable. And as Henry says, it is a different game in some ways, because there's probably 15 or 20 more points per game on average than there was 10 years ago. That's changing what hurling is as a game to play, but also as a spectacle.
Well, I tell you what, it's changing it as a game to report on. You try and keep track of games with 57 scores in them and get all the subs right. I think this is really interesting to me. Almost like I come to it as sort of an outsider. You know, there was no hurling where I grew up, and it's been one of the great sort of loves of my adult life to discover this sport and to really try and understand it. And I think a few things strike me as interesting. Like the overarching thing is that there are so many scores. Now, so is our problem, or is the problem that, that people talk about here, is it that there are too many scores? Like, is can that be a thing? Can we really say that there are too many scores? Well, maybe that is it, because you're talking about a 75-minute game here, let's say, with about 54 scores and maybe another 40-ish wides. Let's say 30-ish wides. So you're essentially talking about a shot a minute. And that's an awful lot. That, if you're talking about a shot a minute and then, let's say, puck outs are taking 10 seconds, you're leaving basically half a minute for the other areas of the game, if you know what I'm saying. Like, you're leaving a half a minute for catching and for blocking and for hooking and for sideline cutting and all the things that go into making the sport. And I think that is a little bit what people are getting a bit tired of. I don't think it has just happened in this league. I think we talk about it more in this league because, as you said at the outset, Mikey, the league doesn't really matter. And so we're looking for other things to talk about. But I think this has been a real pattern in the game for the last 3-4 years. I think there was definitely plenty of games in last year's All-Ireland. Obviously, this was all heightened by the fact that there was nobody in the stadiums. But there were definitely games, you know, Limerick games, where they were scoring upwards of 28, 29, 30 points. And it became repetitive. It became, you know, it was almost... I saw someone describe the other day as, you know, that the big knock on Gaelic football for a long time has been that it has turned into basketball. But actually, hurling has turned into basketball because there are so many scores. And you tune in for the last 5 minutes to see, is it... Like, if it's close, it's exciting in the last 5 minutes. And it depends who has the ball when the final whistle goes.
Yeah.
And that's probably leads back to why my colleagues were probably so concerned last week, is because, as Maliki's outlined, because there's so much scoring and it's obviously become a possession game now, the level of tussles or physicality to develop, and that one-on-one, you know, it's a cliche, but that is not as much prevalent in the game as it was when I was playing. And Maliki is right, this has happened. Like, you think back to 2014 or the Ireland final, the first day, you know, one of the greatest games of modern memory for a lot of people. But you asked Brian Cody 2 weeks later after Kilkenny won the replay, and he probably rather a replay where the scoring was reduced dramatically because of the art of defending. And that's one of the things that's concerning.
Not to interrupt you, Henry, but the one thing about that 2014 final, okay, the scores, it was a very high scoring game. In the last 25 minutes of that game, there was two wides in the whole, like, Bubbles is one with the free, and Noel McGrath hit a pass into somebody that dribbled out over the end line. That was the only two wides in the last 25 minutes of that game. So it wasn't a shot every 25 seconds. Mm. It was a game of pure tussle, pure hurling, but nobody missed. That's what elevated it. That's what made it like one of the greatest games anyone has ever seen.
Do you, Henry, a few years ago, it wasn't quite the same existential level of angst, but there was a lot of people complaining about the ruck and how much time was spent battling in a ruck. And now people are like, Jesus, do you remember rucks? They were great.
I actually thought of it when Maliki was talking about it there. I remember a couple of years ago, someone told me when Brian Cody actually spent a bit of time practicing the rucks. You know, he had all the lads in one ball and they were just practicing and they actually got good at it. But that was not happening. But I think it is that. I think we all realise the game we love is still the game we love and we will find there. And I think there will be a bit of an equilibrium that'll bring us back and that bit of balance will take place. But there is concern about the level of score. There's no doubt about it. How can you tackle that? As I said, I'm happy with the rules. I think the refs, to be fair, are doing a good job. So speaking about the rule book, I'm very happy. The one thing for me is touch on the football is the hand passing. Because of the possession game, the hand passing happens a lot. Are some of them illegal? I would say so. If we cut down on that, you know, that quick ball away, it mightn't be as easy, get it away and possession. It gives more opportunity for players to turn over the ball. And that's what we like to see, the excitement of turnover ball.
Yeah.
But I think the equipment thing really, it seems to be the kernel of this. Mm. I mean, like, I'm a big golf fan. I remember this brilliant story Colin Montgomery said one time about playing in the Ryder Cup. and he was, I think he was playing with Faldo, he was partnered with him, and he said to him, Faldo said to him on the first tee, you should take a three wood here, and Montgomery went, first tee of the Ryder Cup, I'm using something with a big face. That's what I've been thinking of the last couple of weeks watching hurling, like this size, the size of these hurlies now, and they're outside, like they are outside the rules, just nobody enforces it. Yeah. Nobody enforces it.
That was so, what I was going to... Go on.
But that would seem to me like that there are rules there. Sean Moran's writing about this in today's Irish Times. There are rules there about the size of the boss. There are rules there about the size of the rim on the slitter. If we started by enforcing those and then see where we are, you know... I was at Westmeath in Tipperary on Sunday, and Barry Heffernan was playing wing back for Tipperary, and he was standing down in front, wasn't the press box, he was standing on his own 65 for most of the game. He scored two of the handiest points he will ever score just by standing on his own 65 and stroking them over the bar in open play. And I was looking at him going, like, a guy scoring a point from his own 65 used to be this mind-blowing thing. It'd be like, you know, where did the Rock score his point from? Like, yeah. It used to be this absolutely amazing thing. And Barry Heffernan was essentially standing there, and it was as if he was leaning on his hurley, and then he just put the ball over the bar.
Malika, you know? I'd love to, you touched on an interesting thing. I'd love to look back in last weekend and see, of the half back lines, what was the cumulative score? Because we're talking about scoring, but as well as that, we're talking about defending. And I don't think, you know, the half backs now at this stage are more attackers than they are defenders. And Caelan Limes, for example, you know, you see him coming out from Waterford 1-2, 1-3, 4 points, you know. But I do question then sometimes to see, are we losing something on the other side? Are we defending the way we should be? Galway scored 5 goals against Waterford last week. So as well as going forward, you have to go back and defend as a cohesive unit. So
you need defenders in your half forward line.
Well, Galway, for example, has Sean Loftus and Adrian Toohey, who actually played there. So it's just a very interesting dynamic around the whole team.
You'd get disturbing. You'd get disturbingly little ball if you were playing now, Henry. You know, they're to an extent, as you say, you probably wouldn't get the same amount of ball, like inside forwards.
Playing centre back.
Yeah. Inside forwards now are used smartly, but also used sparingly, because as Maliki said there, you don't need to work the ball to within the 45-65 for a guaranteed score.
Yeah,
but the slitter and hurl is, you can guarantee your score, or if you have the right wing backs, you can guarantee a score from your own half.
Yeah, but the quality of ball that's delivered in is much improved. So if we are playing in a two-man sideline, you look at the way the footballers that bounce the ball in front of the chest. This is another interesting thing for me, is that you can see the halfbacks now just bouncing that ball. So a corner forward is coming out. He's just taking it on the turn, and he's going away from goal. And that's another thing, I suppose, we would have been told years ago, head towards the goals, get in around the goals. But actually they can come out now because they can hit it after 1 foot swinging backwards on their bad side from 50 yards and still get it over the bar like Aaron Gillan. They can just do these things now as well.
Henry, can they do those things because it's I know it's a combination, but I have to ask you the question anyway. Are they able to do, like, these ridiculous scores you mentioned, running the wrong way after bad side over their shoulder from the sideline? Again, this is like the point from your own 65. This used to be that would characterize a final. That was the final where such and such scored that point over a shoulder from the sideline. It's now nearly every game. Is that because the hurl has a massive sweet spot, or is that because hurlers, like athletes in nearly every sport, thanks to sports science and knowledge and coaching, are just getting better and better?
I think they're getting better and better. I think they're more skillful, definitely. I think the ball, whatever about the hurl and the sweet spot, you know, that takes practice, Mikey. So I think that's
oh, I know.
Down to that's down to the skill of the player. But I definitely think the ball is having a part, because I think the level of resistance with the rims being reduced now is not there, and they definitely can travel farther. Because you see Tony Kelly put a ball over the bar from 100 yards. But the troubling part is that probably he has another 15 yards spare when it goes over the bar. So that's the concern, you know?
Yeah, it is. Maliki, because there's a touch of, like, we could, momentum builds in these debates in the GA, and it happened in football for long enough, as you very well know, and like they gather momentum, and And like it can get to a point of like, oh, smelling salts, and oh, please, won't someone think of the children? Is there an element here that we all need to just shut up and appreciate the fact that, okay, there are 70 scores a game, but my God, did you see that last score by Aaron Glenn? He was falling over his shoulder. He fell over the sideline and the ball went over the bar, and we're complaining?
To an extent, but the one thing, and again, looking in as an outsider, that I've always been impressed with hurling people is that they're very fierce in defense of their game. Like, hurling people, they love hurling so much. I'd say that with full admiration, because I think football people take football for granted a little bit, you know, because they don't stand up for it as much as hurling people.
Well, it's more universal. It's played everywhere. It's not an endangered
species. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I do think that it's a credit to them. It's a credit to hurling that it talks, that it wants to tease this stuff out, because, you know, without getting into slippery slopes and all that, if the evolution of the ball and the hurley and the strength of the players and the accuracy, if that keeps going, well, okay, so it's only 6-7 years ago that we thought taking frees from your own 45 was ridiculous shooting. That's reasonably par for the course now. Each team has a player who can do that. How long is it until, you know, with a fair wind, puckouts are scoring chances? You know, are we 5 years away from that? Are we 10 years away from that? And I think it's important that the sport talks about this before you get to that point. And because nobody wants that. Like, nobody wants a game reduced to goalkeepers taking puckouts and the rest. You know, that sounds like an insane thing to say, but this is the evolution generally goes in one direction unless you take steps. Yeah. It can't get.
And I agree totally with you, Maliki. And I think baseball have done something similar to reduce the level of. I think Sean Moran again touched on that in his piece this morning. So. You know, I think we have to take steps because this level of scoring. Now, look, there's lots of conditions we're feeding into it, but I think it definitely is a concern, and the equipment is the major part, because the players are getting better and they're going to get better.
Yeah,
they're going to get better
and they're going to get stronger and they're going to get they're going to keep refining their bodies, and we shouldn't get in the way of that. Like, that is the progress you absolutely should encourage. But the one thing that is not going to happen in the GAA. Golf has reacted to equipment by making the courses longer. The GAA are not going to make the pitch bigger.
No.
Like, the pitch is the same size now. Crow Park is the same size now as it was on Bloody Sunday in 1920. It is not going to change size. So the parameters that hold the game are going to stay the same size. The players are going to get bigger. What the only weapon really that you have there is to make sure that the equipment doesn't get to such a silly place that, you know, people are shooting for points from their own 20. Like, and we can't get to that point.
It's an easy enough fix, as Henry's touched on it. The rims on the ball are on the slitter are the most straightforward way of doing it. And whether you do that, very difficult with the amount of independent traders operating in the world of hurling construction to bring in to standardize that.
But at the same time, Mikey, there's got to be, it can't be beyond the wit of men. Like, if we're going to, you know, if we decide that hurling is something worth taking care of, if we decide that as an association, if we decide it as a country, then, you know, you can enforce a standard.
Yeah.
You can license a standard hurley, a standard ball, all that sort of stuff.
Studs are checked before a soccer match, Henry. You could have the referee or the referee's assistants or a GAA official at a game, whether it's passing the hurl through some kind of a shape that shows that the boss isn't too big or something. I suppose it is doable, but my point is that the slitter would seem like the easier fix, and it does seem like something the GAA are thinking about.
But why not standardize it?
Oh yeah, no, it is. But I'm saying, if you're looking for an easy fix, the slitter would seem easier.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I couldn't see myself. For anyone listening to this now, my eyes were thrown to heaven when you started talking about the assistant referee coming up to check the box of the hurl with a measuring tape. I don't think that's going to be very practical, because what you'll have is you'll have lads making the hurl. Breaking the hurl in the first 30 seconds, and the new one will be in So I definitely think the slitter is the way to go.
Just on rules, I know I think there seems to be some kind of consensus here that equipment is the major issue. It's not the new rules I want to touch on here. It's there seems to be some kind of objection, maybe not objection, but kind of people seem a bit puzzled by the fact that referees are kind of applying old rules. Brendan Cummins said it on League Sunday. If there's a tug of the arm around the middle of the field, the ref is instructed to give the free. You see, that's just the rule of the game. They're like the same way as we're thinking about games years ago. I don't remember that much pulling, and maybe it's because there's more ground hurling and you used to just, you know, pull, and that was kind of what a battle was, and there was less kind of running with the ball in your hand. But to me, a shoulder's a shoulder, and obviously there's some of your colleagues who were at that meeting, the former former Kilkenny players, who they were worried about the shoulder being taken out of the game, and that would be a problem. But to me, you shouldn't be tackling by pulling someone's jersey. Any field contact sport I know of, bar American football and rugby, basically that's a free. You can't pull a jersey. That's not referees being pernickety. That's just a rule.
Yeah, and that's not a grey area. That's very, very simple. I just think it's coming back to this spare hand is the kind of the grey area one where you think, and you look at what Joe Canning did last weekend for the goal, and obviously saw it where he flicked the ball up, and he just used his left hand just to kind of block Austin Gleeson's path and give a lovely pass into Brian Concannon, I think it was. Like, I don't think that is a foul by Joe Canning. He's just using his body and his armory to pass the ball. So for me, it's not, you know, I think this spare hand is given too much airtime. If someone pulls someone back, if someone grabs someone by the arm and holds them back, it's a free, very simple. That's it. And the other area, I think you need to have that physical contact. I think that's what Brendan Cummins was trying to articulate on Sunday night, was that you need to have that tackle as well. So I don't see it as an issue. I think if it's ref the right way it is, and to be fair to referees, I think they've been very good over the last couple of weeks. So in that sense, and the number of frees in the Waterford Galway match was minimal, I think. So I think that's, and Fergal Horgan did that, to be fair. But I think that's not an issue at all. I think it's very, very plain and simple, as you outlined. If it's a free, it's a free.
Yeah. Amid all this angst, Malachy, there has been some hurling. I just wanted to touch on briefly because I don't mean to hammer the point home, but like this weekend's league matches, you know, Division 1B is won. It's been won by Kilkenny, so that's done. Division 1A is in the mixer somewhat, Malachy, but again, there's likely there may not be a league final. It'll be a shared league. It'll be one of these table quiz question kind of things. It's not, I don't think, something that Galway or Tip are going bullheaded for. But at the same time, I just wanted to mention, because what we were first the first level of angst with hurling this year was what's happened to Limerick. I don't think any of us should worry too much about Limerick, should we?
Oh God, surely not. No. Worry is the last thing they need to have. They were they're a really impressive side. You know, the way they played against Cork, I know Cork sort of half took a dive or whatever, but you could see evidence of what they had worked on in their tackling. So, like, I know John Kiley went a bit mad at the referees after the first couple of games. Whether you agree with them or not, I think it was very clear that Limerick were being refereed differently to what they were at the end of last year's championship. Now, whether it was correct now or correct then is up to your own tastes, but they were absolutely, like, Limerick's first game this year, I remember Will O'Donoghue being pulled for a free and being completely baffled, like genuinely baffled.
Yeah.
And all that had happened was, like, it would not have been given a free last December, but he was given a free now. And you were going, that was a foul win. Like, just because you weren't done for it in December in Croke Park doesn't mean it wasn't a foul. But they have clearly, like against Cork, they were so snappy, they were so sharp in the tackle, like they had clearly worked on it over the last couple of weeks, and like that tells you they're an elite unit, you know, that they have a problem to go and fix. They pissed and moaned about it for a week and then they knuckled down and went and fixed it. So no, I wouldn't be a bit worried about Limerick. I know what you're saying, Mikey. Like nobody cares really about the results this weekend and all of that sort of stuff. But everything's very close now. You know, like this is no, like it's it, you have to, these teams have to calibrate things very, very precisely now. You know, the first round of the Munster Championship is 2 weeks from this weekend. Like, there's no point going out and playing a 60% game. You know, like your championship is here. It's around the corner. Places have to be fought for. You know, formations and playing patterns, all that sort of stuff are important. And like, if this league means anything, then the one thing that we know is vitally important is that teams are, they go out this weekend and they score a baseline of 30 points. They put up 30 points. Because that looks like what this championship is going to be. Maybe, like, we can all say for sure, hey, look, it's all going to settle down. But it really looks like you're going to need to be scoring 30 points a game to win, to go far in this championship. Mm-hmm. This weekend is another chance to go out and do that. Okay, there's nothing really to play for. But it's not like the end of other leagues when there's nothing really to play for. And you had 2 months until championship.
Championship's
a fortnight away. Like, the season is more or less, you like, most hurlers have played well over half their season now, whether they know it or not. You like, a lot of them only have this weekend and then 2 games left, and then it's way back to the close with you lads. Thanks very much, you know. Yeah. So there's really no time to be going out and arsing about now on the weekend.
Like, yeah.
I might add, Mikey, that maybe instead of trying to score the 30 points, then maybe you should try and set a target of keeping the score down to under 20 points defensively.
That might be better
for balance for him. But I actually agree with Malik. I think the flipping thing about 1B is Kilkenny top it. I actually think Clare versus Kilkenny is a great game for both teams. Dublin against Wexford, again, very important game for both teams, I think. And Antrim against Laois. For them as well, I actually think there's a lot riding on. I know your point being is that, you know, it looks like there's going to be no league final, but as Maliki said, the horizon of the championship is 2-3 weeks away for all these teams, so it is vital important. This is their opportunity to showcase the skills for lads that are coming back, that are trying to get their fitness levels up. I think it's a very important game. So
Actually, Henry, can I ask you a question? Like, you would have played championship matches, or not championship matches, challenge matches, say 2-3 weeks out from championship going back the years. Like, are they just mess about games, or is there a real bite to them? Are you looking for a real bite to them?
We tried them when I first started Maliki, but we actually couldn't get the bite on them because you just didn't know what the other team were coming them. So what actually ended up happening in Kilkenny was that we'd have a club championship game, which would be important with biting it, that's 3 weeks out from championship. So we'd be playing our club championship at that stage to get us ready to go back with Kilkenny and be ready for the pace of the championship then in inter-county game. So that's the way Brian approached it.
Yeah,
so that's why I kind of look at these games as they're in the league, but they're a bit more than just challenge matches. They are, you know, like, it's all getting close now.
Yeah, that scans with something Jackie Tyrrell said here on the podcast last year as well. He said that he could not see the value of a challenge match. Just the manager could try and big it up as much as he wanted, but the players knew, both sides knew, this doesn't matter. So once both teams knew this doesn't matter, he said you can't replicate something mattering, I suppose, is kind of what he was saying. Just to finish up then, I think just you mentioned the Munster Championship, Maliki. Just to Henry, the Waterford Clare is looming and they both have difficult games. Waterford, I think people have been impressed by them quite a lot, given the number of retirements, number of injuries. They've shown a fair bit of gumption in this league, and they're welcoming Tipperary. And then, of course, Clare are playing Kilkenny. And Clare, if Waterford have given people positivity in this league, I think people are struggling to see much positivity in Clare outside of the fact that Tony Kelly is a freak of nature. So this is, as you said, this is a very weekend, a very important weekend for both these teams. And as you said, it's nice for both of them, I suppose, that they have decent, the strongest opponents possible almost.
Yeah. I think the Clare thing has turned a bit of a corner. I think it pivoted a bit. I think last weekend was a very Tony Kelly being back. He was supposed to be starting his subs, score 20 points. Just it's crazy when you think about it. Like 20 points, it's just natural, isn't it? Like, it's just crazy. But So he's back. David McInerney's coming back. Colman Galvin, Ian Galvin. So I think starting to come. The big question for both teams, Waterford and Clare, and I think they touched on it Sunday night on the Sunday game, is number six, that pivotal position that we keep talking about attackers, but I think to hold your defence together, to stop goals going in, is very, very important. And I'm not quite sure. I haven't seen enough of Clare to know if John Conlon is the answer. But I will say, to be fair to Brian Lowen, he's gone with it and he's stuck with it. So it's going to do. And I think for something like that, I think it actually normally pays off. You know, I think it does pay off. So it'll be interesting to see. And it's the same thing for Liam Cahill. I think going forward, they're very good. They have attacking wing backs, as we've touched on already, attacking midfielders. So I think they just need to get that number six there that's going to be the bit of rock that they can build the other lads. Because I think Prunty is an excellent fullback for Waterford. So I think
Austin Gleeson isn't a six for you now.
I thought he was very good against Limerick 2 weeks ago. Obviously not as good. Conor Whelan had a poor performance for Galway the week before against Tipperary, but I thought he was very much back in form last weekend. So I wouldn't say no to him. I think he can definitely offer something. He can play something. I've been very impressed with his level of maturity and consistency over the last 12 months since Liam Cahill has came in. So I think they need to find someone there. I've heard Derek McGrath talking about playing him on the wing and giving him a kind of a roving role, but I actually think Austin needs a position. And I think you think back to the great centre-back Waterford had previously, Ken McGrath. I think Austin could fulfil that, but he probably just needs an opportunity and time to develop and make mistakes there, but improve from that. So I think they're the two key things for both teams. But I think Clare are coming a bit, Mikey. And it'll be interesting to see what they bring to the championship.
Yeah. All right, lads. You may be excited about the weekend's hurling, the two of you. Well done. It's taken two true hurling men to make me excited about the weekend.
Yeah, well, we started off very negatively. And the reason for us being so negative on hurling, well, there's so many podcasts and so many opportunities to talk about it. It's just like, you know, back to my time, Malky, like we read your article on a month or whatever.
Indeed, and we talked about it again. Yeah, of course you did.
Yeah. We stuck it on the wall in the restroom then when you said the bad stuff.
Yeah.
But like, it probably wasn't much talk until the following Saturday again about the games the following weekend. Mm. You know, so there's so much opportunity, which is brilliant. And we get to really talk about the nitty-gritty. Who do you think we'd be talking about rims and slitters, Mikey, on a podcast?
Or under 14 camogie. You know, we've gone places we didn't expect it today, so that's all. I ever ask.
It was great to be back in the field and see the young girls running around the place, and all back. The clubs are back this week as well, playing the matches, so it's brilliant. So we're very positive, Mikey.
Yes, we try to be, but you know,
up with hurling.
On that positive note, thank you to Malachy and to Henry. As usual, we'll have coverage across the weekend on Saturday and Sunday Sport on Radio 1 and on the RT website and the RT News app. There's a soccer podcast out today previewing Euro 2020 that all starts on Friday too. So glorious summer stretches ahead of us, fingers crossed. Thank you to Desi earlier, thank you to Malachy, and thank you to Henry, and we'll catch you all next week.
Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. There's the whistle.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
What I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it, it's over the bar! Oh, holy Moses!